Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 60 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and today we are going to recap this week's news. There's a lot of entertainment talk when we talk about all the different streaming services. We've got news from Amazon Prime, from HBO, Peacock, Disney+. Everybody's got their own issues this week, and we cover them all. And then in tech news, we've got a little conflict between Russia and China. SpaceX and space exploration has a big week with SpaceX intentionally blowing up a rocket, Elon announcing some plans for Mars, and then Space Force unveils their new uniforms. There's a lot to get through. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and welcome back, nerds, to episode 60 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And we're going to start this week recognizing and honoring a friend. This is a somber week for the Nerd Cantina community, the nerd community as a whole. And I guess, Steve, I'll let you, you talk about a dear friend.
So last week, a few hours after we got done recording on Monday, I got the horrible news that my closest friend and biggest nerd that I knew was a real inspiration for the show and the blog. He is a writer, wrote a few articles on the Nerd Cantina, and was more of a background contributor to the show. Ended up having a heart attack and passing away at 37, and left behind a wife and three children at the ages of 3, 6, and 9. So that was last week, Monday, after we recorded. Today is actually, would have been his 38th birthday. So it's a little rough day still, only a week after his passing. We laid him to rest on Saturday, to a pretty hefty nerd show out. And I would just like to thank the nerd community as a whole for stepping up in these tough times. We've gotten a lot of support at the cantina. His family has gotten a lot of support from his friends and family and a lot of strangers. There was a GoFundMe started for his family because he didn't have any like retirement plans or life insurance or anything like that. So that's up in the Nerd Cantina actually too. There's a lot of people that donated, that didn't know who he was, but just knew that, you know, he was a kind person, had a lot of good words to say, donated money just because some people went through the same thing. Few widowers, that lost their husbands early, donated. It was amazing. A lot of kind words were said at his service. The guys at the Drink and Draw YouTube channel, which is a show where Marvel artists get together on a group chat and they all draw the same character and talk about the character and its origins and everything. The guys at Drink and Draw did a big show for Darkhawk because that was his favorite character. And a mutual friend, Dave Johnson, who I'd like to thank, put this together really quick on the fly. He passed away on Monday. I want to say the show was up by Wednesday, and had some really big Marvel heavy hitters draw Darkhawk for him and did it in his honor. Talked about Stu for a little while, and then his favorite character, Darkhawk. I'm talking Joe Quesada, the ex-president of Marvel, Mike Manley, the actual creator of Darkhawk, came on the show. If he was alive to see that, it would have really just blew his mind. It would have been all over the place. So I just wanted to take a second in the beginning of the show to honor a really good friend, a contributor to the Nerd Cantina, an avid supporter, and one of the best nerds that our community could possibly have. He was an encyclopedia of knowledge. He was always my go-to if I had questions on whether this character would have, you know, appeared where he appeared. Would he have done this? Was this ever a story? He was just an encyclopedia of knowledge of toys and comics. And he'll be greatly missed.
And a link to the GoFundMe will be on the show page at thenerdcantina.com/show60. And if you can support, again, the family would greatly appreciate it. There has been an outpouring of support, and it's a testament of who he is. I think it's not an exaggeration to say that, like, the Nerd Cantina today doesn't exist without your friendship with Stu. Stu was always a great guy. You know, I pop in and out over the years, and I have always kind of run into Stu, but it's been a couple of years since I've personally kind of sat down with him. But he was an unashamed nerd when nerds weren't cool. You know, now nerds are pop culture, but back when he started getting you into comics and kind of transitioning really what your interests were, and that friendship was really instrumental to kind of
unleashing
your identity today.
Yeah, unleashing the inner nerd. I mean, I sit in my basement now as we record, and I look around the walls of all my toy collection, art from Comic Cons, all the issues that I collected over the years, and 93% of everything in this basement was either bought with him or he saw at a comic book store, called me and said, "Hey bro, I'm standing right in front of this, you know, really dope, like Funko or this really cool figure, you know, you think you'd want it for your shelf?" And I'd say yes or no, and he'd buy it for me, and I'd give him money when he got to my house. He was literally at my house once a week, if not twice or three times a week, just always hanging out, talking nerd stuff. And yeah, like you said, I would not be the nerd I am today if it wasn't for him supporting that side of my life. You know, it's I'm now less of a nerd than I was just by losing his knowledge. You know, he was a great friend to turn to when I had a show I wanted to talk about, or like I said, a comic, and he'd always keep me up to date on what was coming out and releasing, because I'm not as active at the comic book store as I used to. So he was always in the forefront of nerddom, and the cantina is gonna miss him greatly.
All right, well, I guess all that's left to do is just carry forward with this week's news, and I guess we'll get started with a little bit of
this week we do this one for you, Stu. So let's get into some entertainment news with all these streaming services.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start with Lord of the Rings, just because it's a quick mention.
Yeah, this is a big Amazon, nothing burger.
Yeah, Amazon announced that they are releasing their cast for Lord of the Rings, and there's not a single anchor. You would expect one person to be known an anchor to the show. Nope. Nobody. So they've released a cast of people you've never heard of. If you're interested, go ahead and look it up, but we're not going through it.
Yeah, no, we're not going to try to delve into the no names. They didn't even say what characters they were, so it's not like you can Google them and then be like, "Oh, that's a Legolas." Okay. You're like, no, there's like, here's a bunch of random names that you don't know. We're going to make a show with them. You guys should love it. It's already renewed for season two. Give us your monies.
Yeah, I think there's only three character names released, and I think only one of them actually relates to the movie. So, yeah, there's not a lot to go off of as a fan.
But
here,
if you care, look it up. It's all good.
Yep. It's out there. The link's in the show notes. Next, we could talk HBO real fast, and this is just that Damon Lindelof, the creator of Watchmen, he has said that he's not coming back. He's not doing a season two. He told the story he wanted to tell, and he sees no reason to move forward with the season two. He said HBO can if they want to, and HBO said, no, we're probably not. So don't count on a season two for Watchmen.
Yeah, at least at this point. You can be a little upset about it, a little like disappointed, but at the same time, they did it so well. Like, how are you going to recreate? You know, there would be a lot of work that would need to be put in to recreating another season on par with that. And I'd rather it just be a one and done than give me a mediocre or, you know, even less than that season two. So if your heart's not in it, if you don't have anything pre, you know, thought that you wanted to do, just let it ride, man. I mean, if you come up with an idea in 8 years, 10 years, just do another season in 10 years. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I think, I don't think there's no chance of a season two. HBO and these companies don't leave money on the table. I do believe that Damon Lindelof is done. I think he'll probably stay true to that word. But he said that from the get-go. Like, this is a surprise. It's just because you weren't paying attention. Because he said before Watchmen season even came out and he was filming it, and he was essentially saying, fuck you, Alan Moore, about why he was making another rendition and picking up from the comic books. He had said that he had a story he wanted to tell and he was going to see it through. And that was it. Like, he said he was not doing a season two.
But he did end it kind of open-ended so that if anybody wanted to, you could pick it up and running. You know, he wasn't like a dick and just like killed off like three main characters at the end. It was like, fuck you, no one's touching this now. You know, he kind of, you know, he did a good job telling a really good story. And, you know, the final product was phenomenal. And he left it to where, you know, you guys want to do something, go ahead and do something. I did what I wanted to do. I'm proud of my product, and I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, and I think we can kind of move forward to the next streaming service to talk to about is NBC Peacock. I still haven't seen a firm date on when this is starting, but...
The show list has got me a little interested, though. There's some cool things, some cheesy things that I hope they do well. You know, you got a Saved by the Bell extension, you got a Punky Brewster extension. You know, they're delving deep into the NBC nostalgia and trying to reboot some of those. But you also get a couple like interesting documentaries. I saw that they were gonna make. There's going to be a show that called, like, I think Who Wrote It, where it talks about SNL sketches and delves into, like, the writing part of SNL, which would be pretty interesting and cool, I think.
Yeah.
With the SNL theme, they're also greenlighting a MacGruber TV show, which I fucking love that movie, man. I fucking love that movie. So I'm looking forward to a MacGruber TV show. It seems like they have... it more thought out than Disney Plus almost. So like, I really think Disney Plus dropped the ball on not having another show releasing in the next month. You know, now that Mandalorian's been wrapped for a couple weeks, to not have another show in the major lineup of shows that's going to release in the next month or two, I think they really missed the mark, and it is hitting their subscriber numbers. So we don't know release dates on these shows, but you'd think that they're going to have it. From the talk, it's going to be lined up a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that they've got a bigger plan of a bunch of original content coming out the gate. You know, even unscripted, you know, reality type shows, and there's a lot. They also have a ton of people that are attached to the NBC universe when it talks about, you know, writers and producers and actors. So it's easier for them to roll out content as they're always been a big content creator. Disney Plus being kind of new to that game and trying to mature their content. And Disney Plus, I think, you know, all along, it was just about, hey, we're just going to open up the vault and just give you everything. And they've taken some flack for that because, yeah, it is a very weak original content scene over there. So there are some great shows that are looking interesting within this NBC universe, this Peacock service. Coming out the gate,
they gotta throw some money at Kelly Kapowski though for me. They like, sorry, gotta do it, man. I like, yeah, Zach Morris, really cool to get him on. You know, like I'm all happy about that. But I mean, you don't give me Kelly Kapowski, I don't know, man. It's gonna be hard to be enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, and then what? Another kind of interesting story coming out of this whole NBC Peacock services. There was a briefing that took place, and NBC gave some details that we don't normally see from these companies as far as what they consider the avenue or the average revenue per user. And
that was a number I was really interested to see that even like cable companies, so Comcast, each channel makes about $6 per viewer, which is a number I was curious about and you know, quantifying how much money these companies make, and I'm surprised they released that information.
Yeah, and it's showing that even based off of kind of these streaming models that we all think that, you know, the future of TV is streaming, and really these regular, you know, broadcast TV companies should just probably die. But what the numbers are showing is that still the average revenue created per viewer on cable and broadcast TV is still higher than what they project they're going to get coming out of their pricing models for Peacock. They're going to have three different pricing models. One that's free that you can have, you know, purely advertised, funded by advertising. A $4.99 model that's going to have more content. So there's going to be some content that you just have to pay for as premium content. But $4.99 is going to give you that premium content and still the ads. Or you could pay $10 a month or $9.99 per month to have no advertising and all of the NBC Peacock content. But even with those pricing models, they're saying that they're expecting $6 to $7 or so average revenue per user. And they get greater than $10 per user in some of their channels, some of their actual broadcast channels and cable channels. So the money is still kind of significantly higher when we talk about percentage.
What's interesting,
rate.
Too, is that they released the profitability date. So they don't think they're even going to turn a profit till 2024. So that gives you a little insight on, you know, how much money it takes to get this thing up and running. You know, they're putting together shows with actors and writers and budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars without even expecting a profit for another 4 years. You know, yeah. Like that's, to me, that's insane. That's amazing. But it's a long game, right? You know, it's hard for us to think of that kind of a long game. You know, if we were all asked to give somebody $1,000 now so we can get a big return in 5 years, you know, like give me $1,000 now and I'll give you X amount of dollars in 5 years. You know, it'd be hard to get people to invest in that. You know, it's a long time to just be waiting to see if you turn a profit.
Yeah. And I think, it's probably tough for these companies to truly project what the subscriber rates and things are going to be as everybody keeps coming out. Like who's going to get the market shares? How can you actually estimate how many subscribers you're going to be able to keep when there's $300 worth of streaming services for people to pay for? You're only going to get.
What are we at now for streaming services? We got to be nearing a dozen at least.
Oh yeah. There's easily a dozen. I mean, at a minimum, I'm just trying to look through, but you've got, you know, Peacock, Disney Plus, Hulu, even if you want to go with like ESPN Plus has their own streaming service for sports, Apple TV, Netflix, Amazon, HBO Max, CBS All Access, and then Showtime, Stars, IMDb TV, YouTube TV, Hulu. All of these are different services.
Yeah, that's
some of them overlapping,
right there.
But yeah, there's a lot out there, so I don't know what these subscriber bases are going to necessarily be for these companies and how well they're predicting, but they're willing to take the loss. We talked about it weeks ago that Apple TV also is not profitable. It doesn't make sense for Apple's model to do Apple TV. It's not a part of what it's not a part of it.
You got shows like The Morning Show on their streaming service winning Globes, SAG Awards, you know, so they put out, and I like that show. It was actually a really good show. So the quality is there. So as they're not profitable right now, as these award shows come out, that's how a lot of people find the TV shows. I said the other week that's how I found Miss Maisel. This show that I never heard of won a Best Actress award. And I was like, how does that happen? Like, I've never heard of this show in my life. And I started watching it, and now it's one of my favorite shows to watch. And I think you're going to see that with a lot of these services. They're just going to go all in and try to put together some high quality shows, get some nominations at least in the awards ceremonies, and then you're going to see people, you know, curious. You know, I still have to go back and watch that Fleabag. I'm sure there's a lot of people now interested in signing up for Apple TV just to check out The Morning Show, because yeah, Jennifer Aniston was great in it. The guy who was nominated for supporting actor, not Steve Carell, but the other main lead actor. The guy who played, was he Dr. Manhattan? Yeah, I think he was Dr. Manhattan in The Watchmen. He was phenomenal in that show. So yeah, I see a lot of people kind of paying at least $5 for 1 month to see what that'd be about.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's, It's interesting to see where these things are going to keep shaping out. And I mean, I'm not going to pay for Apple TV yet. Maybe I do somewhere down the road. But, you know, I'm definitely one of those. I'm extremely selective where I'm going to spend my money. And it's going to be difficult for these companies to really justify it. Like, I almost want to get CBS All Access just for that Picard show.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to do it.
I know. Like, I do want to check it out. Like, I just can't. I can't pull the trigger on that one. It seems like, I don't know why, like, I can't justify it.
But this takes us, you know, this is right in line with the next story that we wanted to cover. And that was just that Netflix announced kind of their budget going into next year. And if you think, yeah, streaming services aren't getting the full attention, Netflix has announced that next year that they're going to spend $17.3 billion on content, or this year, 2020, $17.3 billion on content, which they spent $15.3 billion last year, you know, which got them things like, you know, a great Stranger Things, The Irishman, some of these big budget kind of movies and actors and stuff that they're bringing in. Well, they're only dumping more money into it in 2020. It's there's so much money going into these companies.
Yeah, because I think a lot of us don't think globally, right? We think, you know, as Americans that the world revolves around us. So like we only equate it to the 300 and something million Americans that are possibly watching these shows. But really these streaming services are, it's a global thing. So you have a potential 7 billion customers, you know, and the amount of money that they're trying to get. You know, they want it all. You know, they want a bigger market share in Uganda, I'm sure. You know, like, the staggering amounts of money that we hear when they're spending it on shows, you know, you hear that number, but you don't also think of the amount of income they're bringing in at the same time. So you hear that $17 billion, it's like, holy shit, just to make a bunch of TV. And then, you know, like, yeah, but they're raking in hundreds of billions. And you're like, oh, well, okay, I guess it's not that big of a deal.
No, I mean, it's not, but it still is. It's still, I mean, they're still significantly outspending other industry, you know, services and stuff like that. They are committing way more money to original content than anybody else. I think the same article talks about other streaming services competitors, that Disney Plus is only spending $1 billion on original content in 2020. HBO Max, $2 billion. Peacock, $2 billion. So, you know, they are, by a significant multiple, out spending all the other ones that we expect to be in this original content
game. Well, but you also have Netflix being like the major streaming player since streaming was a thing. You know, it was Netflix and chill for years. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it was. So, you know, they want to keep that top spot. When you think of streaming services, Netflix is usually the first one that comes to mind, and they want to keep it that way. And with them being up for Oscar nominations with The Irishman, all kinds of Emmys and Golden Globes, with their content, I understand the mentality. You know, when you're on top, you don't want to falter, and they're willing to throw piles of money to make sure they stay up there.
Yeah, I guess one interesting thing coming from there, $17.3 billion worth of content. Mindhunters, not one of them.
Which is kind of a messed up situation. So the showrunner for Mindhunters just hasn't come up with a new season yet. You know, he's been busy with some other projects, just hasn't had time really to work on the next season of Mindhunters. And because of his delay, now all the actor contracts are expired for Mindhunters. So now the actors are free to pursue other projects. They don't have to keep a block open for Mindhunter season 3. So with nothing being put on paper, and now the actors not being contractually obligated to fulfill a third season, who knows what's going to happen with the show? And it's sad. That's one of their, man, their top notch shows, man.
I've still never seen an episode of it, but it's on the list.
Yeah. This list you speak of is quite long.
Yeah, I things always jump ahead of it. Like Witcher, I just finished Witcher. I'm constantly jumping things ahead of some of these older shows, but yeah, this is one of the beauties of streaming services, and also one of the downsides, right, is they don't have to stick by the fall TV schedule anymore. They don't have to stick to a very rigid broadcast framework, which allows the creators to have greater control, allows them to tell it in however many episodes they want.
It gives guys like you a chance to like sit in the back and just pick and choose your shows. But if maybe there was a little bit more urgency, you'd have watched the OA and I would have got a fucking third season of that.
That's absolutely possible, right? So this is part of, I think, one of the pros and cons. Is the pros is, hey, the creators get so much control and they can really take their time and tell the stories the way they want to, and they don't have to rush into it. And also, it's really easy for these streaming services to kind of cancel it, delay it. They're not stuck to a timeline either. Actors can come and go. We see contracts like this fall apart. OA gets canceled for, you know, really nobody understands why. It's an interesting kind of take trade-off here.
Yeah, there's no sweeps week. There's no fall premieres. There's no, you know what I mean, timing up Christmas episodes for the Christmas season. You know, we got to have a Thanksgiving episode come out the week of Thanksgiving. There's a lot of freedom that comes from posting on these streaming services. And majority of it works in their favor, I'd say. But you do get some people that, you know, oh, I can watch that show next time. I need to watch this. And, you know, it also speaks to like the free market, I guess. You know, if you really wanted to, if you heard more good things about OA, maybe that would have been higher on your list, but you didn't hear enough. And I think it puts a lot of pressure on marketing. So not as like, you know, Netflix, as long as it's got subscribers, I doubt they care what you're watching really.
They care.
I mean, to an extent.
There's a reason why you turn it on and it's immediately playing trailers for whatever latest thing they created and whatever they're trying to push.
You know, to an extent they care, but as long as you're paying that monthly, you know, if you're just watching Friends all goddamn day, they don't give a shit. You paid the same amount of money as the dude who watched the Six Underground or whatever. So
it's also why they don't advertise or they don't release, you know, viewership of individual shows or whatever else. The only time they do is when it like benefits them and they can say, you know, over 1 million people watched Watchmen on the day of release. Like they'll come out and they'll give some numbers when it benefits them. But otherwise, yeah, they don't release the numbers. They don't have to justify.
So it puts a lot of pressure on, you know, showrunners and people associated just with the show to do some of their own marketing and their own they have to be in control. They have to be on Twitter promoting their show. If, you know, these actors, I think it puts a lot of more pressure on the actors because they got like the most to lose, right? If your show gets canceled, you know, most of the creators and writers, they find work pretty fast because there's a shortage of creative minds in the world. But there's no shortage of people that want to be famous. So I think it puts a lot of pressure on the actors to make sure that they're promoting their shows and that there is a knowledge. Cause I think that was the big problem with the OA is that nobody knew what the show was and they just, you know, if you were a fan, you told your little group of friends and it was hard to even get them to watch it because it was hard to explain what it was, and it's, you know, like, no, you just got to watch it. You just got to watch it. And it's like, okay, yeah, yeah. They tell you, yeah, sure, I'll get to it. And they know goddamn well they ain't going to fucking watch it. You're going to go home and watch whatever you want. So I think that's, yeah, that was one of the downfalls of it. And you'll see more shows kind of go the way of the OA and Firefly.
Yeah, well, I think we'll move to some Disney news as – First bit in Disney news is Disney officially kills the Fox. Just go ahead and distance yourself from that name altogether, as they've removed Fox from, you know, it's no longer Fox Searchlight Productions. It's just Searchlight. It's no longer 20th Century Fox. It's just 20th Century Productions. So the Fox name is being removed from its properties.
You can't blame them. You really can't. You know, they don't want. Their brand associated with the old brand. So it was bound to happen. I'm wondering if they're going to go in and scrub some of those intros, you know, and scrub the fronts if they got a team of people and they're now doing that. But they have their own brand. They have to represent what they stand for. They didn't want to be associated with, you know, because there's still, you know, a Fox company out there, you know, making content. So I'm assuming Disney didn't want to associate themselves with another product named Fox.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I guess a bit surprised that this wasn't a part of like their initial purchase agreement. This wasn't a part of that initial press release, but yeah, it's a goodbye Fox. I guess it's
why release really all this news in one see. Week when you could just span it out and stay in the headlines for a few, you know, for a little while.
Yeah, I'm hoping they go back and take certain Fox productions or whatever else, you know, maybe we'll get like a Deadpool blowing up the Fox out of the logo on
it. Yeah, well, I mean, if anybody's going to do it, that's the one.
Yeah, so we'll see if somebody makes fun of this this abrupt change to the plan here, but
yeah,
it makes sense. And then sticking in Disney, just another Disney Plus show we talked last week about Hawkeye being delayed indefinitely, potentially canceled. We'll see what that looks like. You know, they also have ran into issues with the Doctor Strange movie. And then now they have another setback on another one of their shows they were trying to anchor themselves to, and that's Falcon and Winter Soldier show has a production setback.
Yeah, they're taking some L's, man. They're really taking some hits, and I wonder how this is going to affect the overall, because they got a lot of wheels in motion over there, you know what I mean? So these can't be fun board meetings to be sitting in right now.
Yeah, you know, Kevin Feige looks like a nice guy, but I could just see him in a boardroom just losing his shit on everybody right now. But and, you know, Phase 4 looks like it, you know, it's a bit of a mess coming out the gate between the arguments over Spider-Man and then now so much production delays, losing directors.
I meant to ask last week, I haven't had a chance to really kind of delve into it, but what is going on with Jeremy Renner? Like, what did he do necessarily? Like, I thought I heard he was getting divorced. Does it have something to do with the divorce?
Yeah, so he definitely was getting divorced, and I think there were some allegations of like domestic violence. Like, he started becoming it's really weird. He's an eccentric guy to begin with. Everything you see about him is weird. He was running like almost like an outdoors channel on YouTube and stuff like that. Then he was had like an Amazon store that was the Renner store that was all a bunch of like survival equipment. And he's done some like questionable things where he comes under fire for, man, I want to say, is it certain hunts or stuff like that he was doing with like his kids? And people were like, this is like child abuse. You can't do this shit with kids. And like everything he did, he's he got, just started getting some negative publicity.
He's got his 8-year-old free climbing with a bow on his back.
And then his marriage started to fall apart for a bunch of reasons, and then allegations of like domestic violence and stuff started coming out. I don't tend to, you know, tabloid these things too often to look into, you know, what exactly was happening.
I don't really enjoy going through people's dirty laundry like that, you know. So like, but yeah, it did pique my interest once, you know, shows get all fucked up because of it.
Once you start fucking up our MCU. But yeah, I mean, Disney or whatever else has come back and said, you know, they've supported him. They're not looking to replace him at all or whatever else. But yeah, there's just a bunch of weird allegations coming from his wife, both, you know, again, the allegations within their marriage and then allegations against him as a father. All of it is supposed
to
be pretty
weird. And when it comes to a lot of this stuff, you know, you never know, you know, you get one side of the story, you don't get the other side. And a lot of this is lawyer posturing for child support fees and, you know, spousal support. You know, the more they could drag this dude's name through the mud, the more, you know, divorces get ugly. So I try not to delve too deep into it. But if it happened, you know, like, yeah, it's, not looking too good.
Yeah, so I think we could leave the tabloid stuff, leave it there, and I don't know.
I think that takes us out of entertainment, you know. Falcon.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify real fast. The Falcon is a Winter Soldier setback. This has nothing to do with like mismanagement of Marvel, though. Like this is you know, all the other shit was mismanagement. It's all talent management. It's all other problems and stuff that they have. This Falcon Winter Soldier thing. This is just nature piling on and saying, fuck you, right?
Bad luck.
Because they're filming this in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico just suffered two pretty large earthquakes and then a bunch of aftershocks that caused their entire production team to be grounded in the U.S. They couldn't fly and get set up. That's what's causing this one. So, yeah, this is just Mother Nature doing what it does best, pile on it during some shitty moments and really, really hammer Disney with some natural disasters at the same time as everything else.
And it's really hard to feel bad for Disney, though. So
no,
just figure it out. Throw some money.
No, yeah, this is what real people deal with all the time is nature kicking you in the junk when you're already when you're already limping. So here they get a little taste of that. All right, now let's roll out of entertainment and start talking about tech. Yeah, even though this first story I find personally entertaining, and that's. Russia is now accusing China of stealing intellectual property.
Yeah, this is one of those the enemy of my enemy is my friend deals, and you forget that still an enemy. Still, you know, you may team up with them to make America look as bad as you possibly can and throw monkey wrenches in our shit, but if there's anything that you could say about China is that they are centrist. They don't care. They care about China and China alone. You know, so when Russia is used to their benefit, they'll be buddy buddy. But if Russia comes up with some kind of tech or something that they see that, ooh, that's kind of cool what you guys are doing over there, I'm gonna steal it. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I mean, this is really comes off the heels because, you know, China, Russia, they are still allied well together. This doesn't change anything with regards to that. China is still the single greatest buyer of Russian military technology and Russian military weapons. So Russia relies very much on the export of their wartime devices, technology, and weapons to China. But what they're finding is, China has the same policy on intellectual property with them as they do with everybody else in the world. And it's, okay, we're going to buy some of your jets and then we're going to break them down, reverse engineer them, steal every bit of code, steal every bit of things that we can, and then we're going to create our own. And that's what they're seeing. What Russia is seeing is that there's certain gliders and jets and missiles and planes that China is now manufacturing themselves that is absolutely stealing from things that they're purchasing from Russia. So,
like, you can't be surprised. Like, Russia can't be surprised either. This is their MO. You know, they're like the Hamburglar of the world stage, right? Like, you know, the United States, Ronald McDonald, we'll give Russia Grimace, you know, but for sure, fucking China is just the Hamburglar. They're going to buddy-buddy up next to you whenever they can, but they're going to pick your fucking pocket.
Take that fucking burger.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good analogy, and it says more about our country as well that we're stuck as fucking Ronald McDonald. Yeah, about our own country.
We're head of the world stage, but we are some fucking clowns. I'll tell you that right now. we may be the leader of this gang, but we are some fucking clowns. Now I want to assign countries to every character. Now this is going to be something I do high as fuck on my couch at like 10 o'clock at night.
I'd have to. You pretty much said all of the ones that I can remember.
Yeah, I know.
Grimace, Hamburglar, and
well,
and
we got a couple countries in Europe are going to be those little McNuggets. I'm gonna Google all the McDonald's characters, and I'm gonna get to the bottom of this at some point.
Yeah, maybe we'll make a meme or a t-shirt out of it or something. I don't know.
I'll have I'll have John, our meme engineer, get on it.
All right, but But yeah, coming out of that story, really, there was a lot of stuff going on in space this week. So we'll spend a little time talking about some space exploration. And first was a really cool test that took place this week. And that was the SpaceX intentionally blowing up one of their rockets. This is a rocket that's been, I think it's been used and recovered 3 times. So they got some life out of this rocket. But as a demonstration to NASA, they did a planned explosion to demonstrate the safety features on the Crew Dragon, which is contracted by NASA to take astronauts into the International Space Station and outer space.
Yeah, no, it's just like with any car, you know, the when Ford rolls out a new car, they slam about 100, 200 of them into a wall just to demonstrate safety mechanisms and you know, you want to know these things work and you got to spend some money to do that. So, like you said, they took one that they got some use out of, you know, they called it a wash and said, okay, let's blow this fucker up and make sure that, you know, all our cargo in the future will be safe in case of an incident like this.
Yeah. So mid flight, they explode, the rocket that was, pushing forward the Crew Dragon, and ideally, you know, the Crew Dragon capsule on the front is able to disengage and essentially get away from the blast and still be able to recover. So that way you don't have the next version of the Apollo missions that, you know, national TV people are watching astronauts flying to outer space and
yeah, I was a little kid when that teacher died, man. I remember watching that. I was a real little kid. It was really fucked up. So they don't ever want that to happen again.
No. So we see this, it was a significant success. The capsule was ejected as planned from the rocket as it exploded. The capsule deployed its parachutes. They've done a bunch of these parachute tests where they have intentionally taken away certain parachutes, ensure that it has plenty of backups to be able to safely land, even if some of the parachutes fail or are destroyed. And the SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule was recovered without issue. So I guess huge success and a big step forward for SpaceX's version of these NASA contracted. As we know, Boeing also has their Starliner or whatever else that they're creating for NASA. But I think Crew Dragon's got the lead on this.
Yeah, I mean, Boeing's always been the number one in, you know, aviation for a long time. But I think they're dragging their feet a little bit on the space. You know, Elon is taking the reins on this. And you have, you know, Virgin right behind them, Amazon right behind them. Boeing seems to be like oh, really? They're making spaceships? oh, they're doing this too? You don't really hear much coming out of Boeing, and except for, you know, faulty controls that make massive amounts of planes crash.
They dump jet fuel all over children in Los Angeles last week.
Yeah, so they have their own issues. I don't know if how much they're focusing on space right now.
Well, I think the last I looked was Boeing's Starliner. Just it's failing to move forward because they're running into some software issues, some issues with I want to say it was like a clock error that was causing it to go off target. Right, that last launch that they had failed to meet orbit or whatever else, and I think they're still working through that. So they have not planned their next steps. But either way, this is a successful test. I love the space exploration to continue. NASA hopefully is one step closer to reliably getting more astronauts out into space to go ahead and get to the International Space Station and hopefully set up scientific exploration sites out on the moon.
Yeah, we're plugging along for Ad Astra. We're on our way.
Yeah, and Elon, he announced this week. That, I mean, he's looking to.
This is insane. This is Elon. This is Elon at the house smoking something really good. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think it's phenomenal. So he said that he plans to send 1 million people to Mars by 2050. So in the next 30 years, he wants to get 1 million people to Mars.
And we're still trying to work on one. Like okay, folks, like we're still at zero population on Mars, and this dude's like, I'm gonna put 1 million people up there. Like, we haven't even landed the first crew there yet, and he's yeah. already like, no, I'll do 1 million. I'll set yeah. a milli.
Requiring 3 launches of Starships per day at some point in time in order to get them up to the. To Mars.
Yeah, dude's talking about running a fucking CTA to Mars and shit. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely wild goal. It doesn't surprise me that that is his goal. I mean, he's been talking about a long time about getting the human consciousness out into space and to set up.
There are cities on this planet that don't have 3 planes landing in a day. You know, like...
Well, and he talked about how, you know, this would create, you know, a lot of jobs out on Mars. Like, are we already talking about unemployment rates on Mars?
You know what I'm saying? Like,
are we really talking about like the economics of this?
You can't find
city?
A job on Earth. Don't worry, 2050, Elon's got you.
Yeah, this is when we just start scooping up the homeless and putting them on starships in the middle of the night and just and just launching them.
Man, you know, like I'm gonna be a Mars farmer, Mama. Like, yeah, this is.
Hey, don't get me wrong. This is 30 really years ambitious. From now. I mean, my son might want to jump on this. I don't know.
But I don't know Elon's exact age. I'm assuming he's somewhere around my age. Like, this dude's going to be in his 70s. Like, by the time you, like you're going to be a 60, 70-year-old man still like, man, let's get this. Let's get this going. Like, at some point, like, you have to imagine this dude's going to want to shut off his brain at some time, you know?
I mean, have you heard of Neuralink?
Yeah.
Like, he's gonna download his consciousness. Like, go ahead and think that he's not going to be a cyborg.
Elon Musk is first head in a jar on Futurama. First one.
So, yeah, he's definitely got some significant plans. I find this one to be... fascinating that, like, you know, for him to articulate exactly what he thinks, and that's a million people on Mars. But again, he's been pretty transparent that this is one of the purposes of the Starships, is to be able to go and start to bring enough equipment in order to set up first on the moon an actual scientific base station there, and then further.
And he keeps
launching these Starship satellites. I think there's another launch set for this week. He's ramping up how many satellites he's getting out. The astronomy community is losing their mind about it and complaining about all these satellites ruining the night sky. And I think, I don't know, like, if you could have a candid conversation with Elon, he's probably going to tell, like, okay, all you nerds with your little, you know, Walmart telescopes, go fuck yourself, because I'm talking about building space stations out on the fucking moon that'll capture better pictures than you're ever gonna do from your telescopes here on Earth. So just everybody stop your crying. I'm advancing science. You're just taking pictures of the sky.
How messed up would it be if, like, he ends up turning Neil deGrasse Tyson into Lex Luthor? Like, we always look at Bezos. We always look at Bezos, you know, as the potential Lex Luthor. But really, you know, he could just piss off an NGT and just, you know, because every time he's looking up, he just sees these satellites whizzing by, and it's like that little, like, itch on the neck that just makes you cringe, and he just goes, has a breakdown. Like, man. But yeah,
But then he puts NGT out in
moon.
Space.
Yeah, he puts him on the yeah. moon. Like, here, I built you a hut. With a telescope right here. Like, don't be mad, bro. Don't be mad. We could be friends.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting guy. I love all of the nonsense that goes on with Elon here.
Yeah, you gotta admire the ambition. You know what I mean? Like, I run a business. I'm just worried about booking my next job. You know what I mean? This dude's thinking 30 years down the road, sending 1 million people to Mars. Like, you do got to just admire the ambition, whether he succeeds or not. I applaud the view of just trying to do things that you know, no, who would have thought? Like,
yeah, and putting your money where your mouth is. Again, he keeps this as a private company, his own little toy company for space exploration. So, you know, this is only going to get better. I'm really looking forward to like 2050. I'm hoping that we at least have a small colony, maybe not 1 million, but let's get a,
yeah. You think he'd set
10,000 people 10 there? Grand,
10K. You know what I mean? Like, but no, fuck it. 1 million. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
1 million people out there, all of breeding age. No old people. You've all got to be breedable up on Mars. And then another, I guess, space story. Fun is Space Force. They unleashed their uniforms this week.
Yeah, I mean, we were waiting for it. We were waiting for it.
And the internet rarely disappoints. They did not in this instance. They immediately went and shit all over the Space Force because they are using the Army Air Force camouflage uniforms, and they just essentially put Space Force name tags on them, and man,
what trees you hiding in, motherfucker? What trees you hiding in? Like, you need camo in space? Shouldn't it be black with white dots? I don't know what brush you're hiding in out in space.
It is it's a quite a hilarious response. It's predictable to some degree that people were going to do this. Space Force the Space Force PR team is probably scrambling to try to justify it, and I don't know, it makes sense for all of the listeners or whatever else who were part of that Twitter mob going at Space Force and telling them that they're camo stupid. Just understand that your tax dollars were better spent by them doing that, because otherwise they were going to spend a lot of money designing their own unique uniforms, their own unique supply system to do it.
They got spools upon spools of camo fabric.
It is not a cheap endeavor to come up with brand new military uniforms.
I think we had a wasted opportunity to not do some kind of Men in Black uniform.
Oh, get the hell out of here. And...
Like, how do we just not create the Men in Black?
This is also a part of, like, everybody just needs to understand, these dudes aren't going to be in space. There's nobody in the Space Force that's going to be in space. They are going
we
to be working.
We just did a story about 1 million people on Mars, motherfucker. we just ended that story.
And somewhere down the road, maybe we'll have, you know, X-wing fighters and stuff like that defending the Mars base station, who's going to be awkwardly wearing like safety vest orange jumpsuits because those are some of our other examples of space military. In the end, yeah, there's really no need for camouflage. All they needed was a uniform, and they saved money by doing this. So get off their back. It makes sense.
Well, hopefully maybe somebody like Project Runway will do it in an episode. Design a new Space Force.
and you know, that's just their working uniform, their camouflage uniform. So
yeah, I want to see the formals.
Let's see what they do for their, like, dress uniform.
Let's see what they do for them. I'm telling you, fucking Men in Black, man. What the fucking Men in Black?
That's where I'm hoping, it gets really, really crazy.
at least give us the color scheme so we can just use the term Men in Black. Doesn't need to be black suits, sunglasses, anything like that. Just give us some black pants. You know, black jacket. Let it ride. Some off branch of like a secret service.
Yeah, but I'm really just curious on what Space Force is going to look like over time. As you know, the first general was sworn in, I think 2 weeks ago. So we're starting to fill the ranks. As right now, it's still, again, it makes sense that they're using the Air Force uniforms. They're still a department of the Air Force. They do not have their own Secretary of the Space Force. They're not their own entity of the Department of Defense.
And that's what I mean. Aren't the Air Force formals all white? White on white on white?
No, Air Force is not. Air Force is blue.
Air Force is blue, so yeah. It's just Navy that's white.
Yeah, Navy has their their white dress uniform. And if you want to talk about like failed, like it just go ahead and Google how much money was spent on like the navy blue camouflage that they did years ago that they're not wearing anymore. And then just thank Space Force for not being for wasting billions of dollars on uniform design. So, all right, well,
I think that's it for space. We can land our self-propelled landing system back on Earth and talk about some of this tech.
All right, which one do you want to go with here?
Let's start with self-healing robots. That's definitely cool. I mean, face recognition in law enforcement might get me a little triggered.
Yeah, the self-healing robots thing is it's weird. I know that there's going to be more studies that are going to come out or explain this better. These initial articles and stuff that we saw this week, because there must have been a press release from this company that that now people are starting to pull the threads on. But they've used some frog, some African clawed frog, using stem cells from this frog in a way that they can program it. And it's a completely new, like, programmable life form. It's essentially a biological robot. Yeah,
this is like Terminator meets Jurassic Park.
And they were able to, like, cut this life form and it did heal itself. It's a self-healing kind of stem cell based entity. It's really weird. I don't know to what level like it can actually be programmed with artificial intelligence things, but it can at some point now. I just don't know what its capability is.
Yeah, they're at step one. We're straight bypassing the Schwarzenegger Terminators and going straight to T-1000s. Like, fuck that. Like, we're skipping a whole iteration. We're going from 1.0 to 3.0.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's changing our concept of what is a robot at this point in time. If this kind of continues, because it's not by any definition a robot. Even your Terminator analogy, it was still a metallic robot that, you know, when it cut it, it self-healed, just in the sense of, you know, whatever it used.
If it's all robot, right? So if it's all robot, but it has sentience and bio kind of like aspects, does that make it a cyborg, even though it doesn't have human consciousness?
No, I don't think so. I think by definition, cyborg is...
Cyborg
is
has the, to have some human element.
So this is what they're calling it, is it is not a robot. It is a programmable organism. Because this is 100% living cells.
They need a better name. It's not as good as robot.
How about biological machine?
Yeah. I mean, it's something like, I don't know. Biobot?
I'm sure somewhere down the way, if it actually becomes something they can use, it'll change. But right now, it's, you know, their hope is that this can be used as... For certain medicines, for medical type tech, you know, I don't know, maybe it's going to be like a, what was that cheesy 80s movie?
I mean, we just did CES last week. You know, it's going straight to fuckables. We just did this last week.
But right now, these cells, even these stem cells, they are self-replicating and they can self-heal, but they only live for about a week or two. As right now, they don't have a mechanism, I think, to consume nutrients. So the cells are created with their own certain amount of nutrients that it kind of consumes itself for a week or two and then dies. It's not something that can actually be used.
It's not sustainable. Right, yeah, now. But like we said, it's like they just figured this out. As we know, technology ramps up exponentially. It's only a matter of time before they figure out all these kinks and apply it in some horrific way against nature.
but it does go into, you know, improving this concept that we can have actual programmable biological things that could, you know, regenerate tissue and to assist like human tissue growth where otherwise they could not, correcting certain birth defects or things that they're talking about. This having future potential when you can actually use these stem cells in a way that can be essentially programmable. So kind of cool. There's a sentence in this that talks about how the company says that, you know, it is unlikely that the AI can have evil intentions. I like that they don't rule it out, though.
It's unlikely. It's unlikely.
I like that, yeah, that they can't rule it out, that they're not going to have evil intentions. And they talk about how at the moment, it is difficult to see how AI could create harmful organisms any easier than a talented biologist with bad intentions could. So, like, come on, company. You can't. I don't know what this company is.
It's not going to be any worse than any bad human. Like, that's the bar we're setting right now. It's, you know, it might be bad, but it's not going to be worse than any typical serial killer human. Like, humans are not the bar we should be setting our artificial intelligence for.
We want our artificial intelligence to be no worse than the mad scientist.
Yeah.
You know, we're okay with that.
Such a low bar.
All right. Well, I think that rounds off the episode here.
No face recognition in law enforcement?
If you want to go there,
I mean,
I don't know if you could do that in a couple minutes.
Well, I mean, just I think it is important for society to realize that you were being watched everywhere and being tracked everywhere. It is an important issue. I do think.
All right. Well, then just to put it everybody's awareness here, and that's so New York Times. They did an article or whatever else, did some research, and they found that over 600 law enforcement companies have signed up and are using this AI called Clearview AI, which is able to match any uploaded photos and actually conduct face recognition through things like Facebook, YouTube, whatever's online. So, you know, potentially making it to where if they've got some grainy photo of you potentially committing a crime or whatever else, that they can scan, scour, and use face recognition to pretty reliably find you quickly through any type of social media profiles, any instance of you on the internet. And
we all know that law enforcement has 100% accuracy when getting the guy that they want, right? Nobody's ever falsely convicted, ever.
Yeah, and it's, you know, this is, it's an interesting type thing. Yes, there is some risk of like false mentions, false identifications that take place through these things. But this is where I think it was going to go anyway. I don't think anybody really should be surprised that they're using some kind of facial recognition software to locate individuals, to locate suspects, or whatever else. You know,
Yeah, it's all fun and games till your doppelganger half a world away does some ignorant shit. Next thing you know, cops are kicking down your door and they just say, no, computer says it's you. Computer says it's you. Get in the handcuffs. You're going away. Like, it's...
Yeah, and, you know, keeping kind of politics aside with, I guess, very specific politics, we do talk... This is, I guess, potentially political in itself, but, you know, there was like the Second Amendment rally that took place in Virginia yesterday, and people went to the rally, and it was cold, but people were wearing like face masks, but not necessarily the kind of face masks you would wear to keep your face warm. The police, it's against the law to protest or whatever else with face coverings. You legally have to show your face, when you pair off things like that and you talk about, you know, then the ability to track who's public demonstrating and who's, it just comes down to, is that a privacy that you are willing to give up? This is, you know, the same concept we talked a lot about it before.
It's well documented that the government's been keeping names of agitators, I guess you could say, since the Black Panther days and before that even.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but think about the ability for, you know, all the cops at these demonstrations or whatever else are walking around with body cams. They're catching live footage and snapshots of every single person that's there. And then through facial recognition, they can absolutely run a database that just says, hey, this is exactly who is demonstrating in these areas. Here's the, you know, there's a lot of things that they can infer from this. And does that violate our privacy? I don't know. You know, you make your own decisions. You know, we look at, it's always just one of these things. We don't talk about privacy.
Not even does it just violate our privacy, but does it, is it ethical of a government to keep lists like this? Is that the function of our government to keep lists of who is actively trying to change our government? You know, that's the beauty of our government, is that it's supposed to reflect the will of the people, and the will of the people can change, you know, the landscape of our government. Well, the government doesn't like change. Like, if that's one thing, as an avid marijuana smoker, I can fucking tell you right now, the government does not like change. They will swat away any science, anything that they don't like to keep the ship, you know, going the way that they want to go. So is it really morally ethical for them to have databases of protesters that are exercising their constitutional rights?
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, this does fall a bit into to the realm of overall, like, governmental privacy. You know, when we talk about our Bill of Rights, we talk a lot about, like, you know, freedom of speech and the importance of, you know, freedom of speech.
But if you're too scared to talk, what the fuck good is freedom of speech?
Yeah, and when we talk about, like, Fourth Amendment rights, you know, people like this would say, well, I don't really care if the cops are doing face recognition because, like, I'm not doing bad shit, so I don't care about this level of privacy.
There's a good quote for that, yeah.
And it's just, I think, you know, some people have likened it towards, like, you know, well, you know, we care about freedom of speech. It's like saying that you only care about freedom of speech if you have something to say, right? Like, no, we always have something to say. Like, we always want to protect it. So we should always want to protect our privacy, because the government's interests may not always align with ours. We may rely on that privacy at some point with search and seizure laws. Like, we want to be protected. We want our ability to maintain that right. And you maintain that right not by lighting it a road now because you've got nothing to hide.
And also, whatever I protest does not define me as a human. Like, you know, that doesn't, just because I believe in this issue and I stood up for this issue doesn't mean that you can just put me in a box and say, well, now you're this type of person and the government should fear you or whatnot. You know, it's.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Again, it's a fundamental kind of concept. It's, you know, you can applaud companies like Apple, who even this last week still refuses to unlock the cell phones for the Saudi Arabian terrorist who, you know, I guess we'll call him a terrorist, who shot up the base in Pensacola. And Apple still refuses to unlock that phone for the FBI. You know, some would say this dude literally just shot service members on a military installation. Yes, we want to see his phone data. And Apple still stands by the fact we're not going to create this backdoor, because it's a backdoor for a terrorist today, and it's a backdoor for petty crime tomorrow, and it's a backdoor for then just surveillance in the future.
Yeah, and you, like, I totally agree with Apple. I do, you know, we don't have a lot of good things to say about some of these major trillion-dollar corporations, but they are doing the right thing by their customers by doing this. You know, like you said, it's a slippery slope, and it's really easy to say, well, unlock the phone for the terrorist. Well, you know, next thing you know, they're unlocking your wife's phone when they pull her over looking for. That's the one thing that always frustrates me about law enforcement and stuff like that, is that they're never talking to you, asking you anything, or looking for anything to help you out. If they're looking for something, if they're talking to you, if they're snooping around anything, it's to fuck you. So don't do anything extra to give them the tools to fuck you, because they're you know, the days of protect and serve are over. I don't think any cop car now says to protect and serve. It's all about it's all about enforcement. And you know, if a cop, even if he's all friendly, you know, hey, how you doing today, ma'am? And da 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 da. You say one thing wrong and he sees a window to fuck you, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. It's his job. It's his job. No lube.
Well, I mean, what we see is San Francisco specifically has already banned facial recognition use within the city. So they have banned it. They're not allowing their police force or whatever else to do it. You know, you'll probably see California roll out something with statewide legislation similar. And there are advocacy groups that are trying to rush to go ahead and just ban all facial recognition within law enforcement. Like I said, there's always a trade-off. You know, you watch shows like 24 and facial recognition is what's catching the terrorist who's walking across the street somewhere. And then we can go and send people to go stop them.
Propaganda.
Right? So, yeah, there's a trade-off. Like, could facial recognition potentially, prevent or at least identify criminals? Sure, it can. And can it also be used by a potentially, you know, somewhere down the road, our government shifts more towards an authoritarian type regime, and it's what enables them to.
Yeah, because as you watch the news right now, it's hard to ever imagine. You know, I mean, just look at China. You know, all it takes is a little bit more fear in Americans to just keep pushing us more towards a Chinese type society.
So, all right. I think we went a little more than 5 minutes on that.
But. Maybe seven. I think it was like seven. It's all good. It's important.
All right. That'll be it for episode 60 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Again, if you're interested in any of the actual source articles and things that we're watching and reading as we research these topics, go to thenerdcantina.com/show60. And you'll also find there, again, that GoFundMe for Stu's family. The show was absolutely in his honor. And we're hoping... there's a little more of a generous outpouring than what's already been demonstrated, which has been overwhelming to see just how many people have come out in support of his family and demonstrating kind of the love for him and who he was.
Yeah, we do have a great community in the nerd community. I think for the most part is as heated and as passionate as we get about the things we care about, and we argue, especially on the Fight Me Fridays and things like that. When it comes to things like this, the nerd community really does bind together and show that despite our arguments and our passion, that we have tremendous, tremendous hearts to do what's right. And, you know, we try to embody the heroes that we look up to and that we read about and watch in all our different mediums. And when we have a chance to exemplify those heroes and do something good and do something right, we tend to gravitate towards that. So this entire last week I've been really proud of his family, his friends, and just the overall nerd community. He was a big HeroClix player. I don't for our board gamers. He has the largest HeroClix collection in the world, and that was verified by the creators of HeroClix, who also said they didn't even have as many as him at a con, which was quite shocking. The guys who make these toys don't even have as many as he does. So to see even just the HeroClix community come out, and then big hitters like we said, Joe Quesada, Dave Johnson, come out and do a YouTube show for him, it's really special. So I thank our nerd community, everybody at the cantina, and anybody that represents Marvel, DC, anime, whatever, that stepped up to show their care and you know, for his family and the loss of a great nerd.
With that said, thanks again, nerds, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care, guys.